Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. In today's episode, we are going to be talking all about insulin resistance and how stress and added sugars in the diet can be contributing to this. So I've been seeing a rise in my office of fasting blood sugar, so elevated levels of blood sugars, and also elevated hemoglobin A1Cs. Now, what the heck is a hemoglobin A1C? It is a test that is used typically to monitor blood sugar levels in diabetics, but I like to look just to see what's going on in my average everyday folks, especially those who are stressed out, noticing weight starting to go up a little bit. These are the folks I like to check because we can head off a lot of problems if we know what's happening in terms of your ability to balance your blood sugars. So one of the big areas that I find this extremely fascinating in is that the more stressed we become, the more we're looking for convenience foods. And I'll be honest, I too sometimes fall into these categories because it ends up being quick to use something that's jarred, something that's boxed to create a meal. Now, some of the other areas in which we have hidden sugars, you could be eating completely clean, but using salad dressings or condiments. I mean, ketchup in particular has added sugars, and depending how much you like to put on, say, your home-style potatoes or your hot dogs, it adds up over time. Now mix that in with eating bread and crackers or chips, cereals, frozen dinners for that matter. They all contain sugars of some sort that are added. I mean, if you go into your fridge right now and look at your sauces and dressings that you have in the fridge or looking in your pantry, you'll be shocked how many added sugars are in there. Spaghetti sauce. This is one that we commonly use at my house. There's quite a bit of added sugar in there. Pizza sauce, added sugar. So these sorts of things, you know, you can look in the moment, but if you add them up over the course of the day, you could be shocked by how much added sugar you're putting into your diet without even thinking about it. Because you might be like, well, you know, tomatoes are a better choice in terms of tomato sauce because you're putting it on your zucchini noodles versus your pasta, right? But if you're putting a lot of pasta sauce, or say you're having seconds or thirds of it with your zucchini noodles, you are still getting added sugar. Combine that with a really stressful day, and now you've got double trouble because anytime you're stressed, you're going to spike your blood sugar as well. Now, before you're starting to think about not eating at all in doom and gloom, hear me out because I'm going to talk a little bit about how you can combat this and ways to get around it. Now, let's go back to basics on sugar, just so you get a little sense of really how much of a problem this is. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, so the USDA, the average American consumes 156 pounds of added sugar per year. So you might be thinking 156 pounds. I mean, that's roughly a little bit more than what I weigh myself. That's crazy. So more than my body weight in sugar. But if you look at it in terms of a sugar bag, think about a bunch of those added up on a shelf. That would be like 31-pound bags of sugar on a shelf. That's nuts. So I couldn't imagine that, you know, when you sit there and think about it. But if you look at your convenience foods, so foods that are packaged, bagged, jarred, etc., it adds up. So what are the recommended amounts of sugar a day for men and women? Well, for men, it's 9 teaspoons, and women, that's 6 teaspoons. Doesn't seem like it's that restrictive, right? Because if we think about 6 teaspoons, that's a lot of sugar. You wouldn't really just throw that into a jar and have at it. But over time, throughout the day, depending on what you're eating, this could add up really fast. There's quite a lot of sugar in chocolate if you're a chocolate fan, and even some of those dark chocolates. I mean, let's face it, dark chocolate's bitter, and so that bitterness is often countered by sugar. So you gotta read the labels, folks. So eating 25 grams or 6 teaspoons of sugar, because that's what it is for ladies, and guys, it's 37.5 grams or 9 teaspoons of sugar. To eat 25 grams of sugar a day seems like that's a lot, especially in this world of ketosis diets and low-carb diets. But honestly, it's hard, even in just a normal diet, if you use any convenience foods just to make your life easier. So, for example, you might be trying to do low-carb, but you've got a salad dressing that you like and, you know, you're offsetting it in that case. You can get to those 25 grams pretty quickly if you're putting a little bit of creamer in your coffee and you're doing, let's say, a couple crackers because you fit those into your low-carb diet. And then you've got, let's say, the zucchini noodles with your pasta sauce. And maybe you also, maybe you also added your salad dressing, like I'd said before. I mean, you could blow through 25 grams of added sugars quickly. And keep in mind that I'm saying added sugars, because if you look at MyFitnessPal or any of those tracking websites where you track what you're eating, it's going to track your carbs, but I'm talking about added sugars. I'm not talking about the carb content that's in a sweet potato. I'm not talking about the carb content in a carrot. I'm talking about added sugar. So essentially, if you were going to do 25 grams or 6 teaspoons of sugar a day and stay within the recommended daily amount, that would be like no ketchup, no mustards. There's a lot of mustards with sugar in it, by the way. No soda, no baked goods, no breads, no cereal. And like I said before, it eliminates most chocolates too. Bummer. So it's kind of crazy to think about it. And even folks who are eating relatively clean, but there's a couple of things that are the added vices, creamer being one of them for a lot of folks, these things can add up over time, because I find that here in Seattle, at least, or the Tacoma area where I live, I will ask people how much coffee do they have, and they say, yes, I drink coffee, but you got to quantify how much, because oftentimes folks will be drinking 2 to 3 cups of coffee a day, and creamer goes into every single one of those coffees. So do the math. You'll get past 6 teaspoons pretty quickly if you're using a standard creamer. So what's the moral of that story? Read your labels and weep, unfortunately. All right. So is going to a alternative sugar the answer? No, definitely not. And we'll talk about a little bit later in the podcast as to what to do, but I am not a huge proponent of alternative sugars because I think they destroy your gut. And we'll talk about the gut too, because I can't have a podcast without talking about the gut. So one of the big things that I hear from folks when I talk about looking at added sugars and watching carbohydrate content, the first thing that comes out of a lot of people's mouths is, what about my brain? My brain needs glucose to function. Absolutely it does. And I am not talking about a ketosis diet. I'm talking about added sugars. I'm not talking about what your body is naturally going to get from fruits, vegetables, etc. So yes, our brains do need glucose, which is the breakdown product of sugar. And I'm going to talk about sugar in a couple of seconds as to what it really is, like table sugar, for example. And technically, glucose and sugar are completely different things, metabolically speaking, because sugar, being 2 molecules, in fact, has to break down to even get to glucose. So sugar is glucose and fructose. And technically, the technical name, throwing the word technical a lot today, the name is sucrose. So table sugar is known as sucrose, and it is the combination of glucose and fructose. Where does table sugar come from? 2 places. Cane sugar, so the sugar cane plant, or sugar beets. Can come from either one, depending on the manufacturer, etc. If something is coming from cane sugar, it's going to say that on the label. If it is coming from sugar beets, chances are it'll say either sugar beets or it'll just say plain old sugar. So something to keep in mind. Now, with sugar, when it gets broken down, yes, glucose can get to your brain for energy. It's also, glucose is the main fuel for all of your cells in the body, the muscles, the regular tissue cells, I mean, liver cells, etc. They all use glucose for energy. So we want glucose. We need glucose. We would be operating in a very interesting manner if we didn't have it. Even in the ketosis diets, we are using the fat for fuel, but it does get broken into glucose eventually. So those things do happen. I'm not going to go into that in this particular podcast, but keep in mind that that is something that does happen. Sugar is not necessarily our enemy, and it's really the added sugars that are our enemy at this point. Now, eating excessive amounts of prepared foods with added sugars over time really does mess with our brain, in a sense that it's messing with our signaling to the brain. In fact, added sugars will reduce the brain's oxytocin system, which is responsible for telling us we're full, we're good. And so by blunting that feedback mechanism by overconsuming sugar, we can't stop eating. We'll go back for seconds, thirds, etc. And so for a lot of people, this is a huge problem and can be part of an eating disorder, or can be the precipitating factor for creating an eating disorder. There's no secret that sugar is addicting. It's the number one drug out there. Anyone who tells you otherwise is goofy, because I don't know what to say. I mean, you get yourself some good cookies and hey, it's hard to stop. There's no joke there. So let's talk a little bit about insulin resistance for a second, because I have a feeling that some folks out there might be kind of wondering exactly what it means, because you've heard the term. It's been talked about a lot in the realms of intermittent fasting and things of that nature and weight loss. So insulin resistance oftentimes shows up in lab tests, like I said before, the hemoglobin A1C or fasting blood sugar just keep going up. And oftentimes I'll have a patient who is pre-diabetic or is actually diabetic, and I can't seem to get the hemoglobin A1C to go down. That's when I know for sure, okay, we're in a state of insulin resistance, meaning that this person's cells are not responding to insulin, in the fact that the cells will not take the glucose in and use it for energy. In fact, it takes the glucose and stores it as fat. The same thing can happen in the insulin resistance universe, in that the liver, which is in charge of releasing glucose from cells in the stored format of glycogen. So I know I'm getting a little techy here, but when our bodies are fat in a fasted state, so in between meals and overnight, our liver is responsible for breakdown of something called glycogen, which lives in our muscles and our liver. And glycogen gets broken down into glucose, and it puts glucose into the bloodstream so that we have sugar to make energy and keep our blood sugar in check overnight. But oftentimes what'll happen in the case of insulin resistance is sometimes the liver doesn't recognize that we have already elevated levels of sugars in our bloodstream. And so it still triggers the release of glycogen from the liver and muscles, and then we end up with double the amount of sugars in our bloodstream, basically creating more of a problem in terms of storage of fat, really, because that glucose, we're not going to be utilizing it overnight. Now, I have a lot of ladies that come into my office, in particular, guys too, but mostly I see ladies coming in and they're having difficulty losing weight, and they've tried ketosis diets, they've tried different programs, and nothing seems to be happening. Well, this is typically when I notice that they're fatigued, they're muscle wasting, they're not able to put muscle on. And if we do a body fat percentage, we see that their body fat keeps going up, and we're like, what the heck is going on? Well, oftentimes this is an indication of something up with the liver.
And if you dive back into it, there's usually some type of viral infection, such as a herpes virus issue that the body is dealing with that's got the liver bogged down, or there could be a mold issue, or there could be liver toxicity. So in that case, if you're having trouble losing weight and you try some of the tricks that I'm going to talk about today and you haven't had any success after about 3 months on some of these recommendations today, then you want to see someone and dive further into what type of stealth pathogens might be hanging out in your system that are not allowing your liver to function properly, and instead it's causing you to muscle waste and build more and more fat storage. So something to think about. I'm not going into that today. I do have a podcast on stealth pathogens. I should have wrote down what podcast that was. I'll put it in my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. So if you're looking for that, for more info, I will have it there for you. So what are symptoms of insulin resistance? Well, we talked about the weight. Another one is extreme thirst, hunger, especially after you just ate a meal, frequent urination, especially at night, fatigue, tingling in the hands and feet, brain fog, decreased exercise tolerance, meaning you can't push yourself like you used to in the gym. You're getting tired more frequently. And I mean this in the sense of someone who's been going to the gym regularly. And hopefully someone who's been lifting weights. Because if you're just going and you're doing cardio and you have insulin resistance, so say you're going into the gym and you're going in on the elliptical and just pounding on an elliptical workout or a stair climber workout or walking or running on the treadmill, you are not doing yourself any favors. You are just making your situation worse because you're just further depleting your muscle stores and you're further causing your body to muscle waste. You got to start working on weightlifting. And I'm not talking powerlifting, but weightlifting. Anyway, point being, if you've been doing a workout program for a while and all of a sudden you're just getting super tired and having a hard time to recover, you might be insulin resistant because you're not able to put that glycogen back in your muscles. So things to think about. So now let's talk a little bit more about sugars and get a little geeky into the sugars for a minute. So I mentioned that table sugar is known as sucrose, and it's the combination of glucose and fructose. Now, there are three main simple sugars out there: glucose, fructose, and galactose. So obviously you've already heard of glucose and fructose because we know that those make up table sugar. Galactose is a different type of sugar, and it's found mostly in plant materials. Glucose is also found in honey and fruit. And fructose in particular is found in fruits. So a lot of people wonder if honey is a better option than table sugar, otherwise known as sucrose. Now, I'm going to get to that in a second because there are a couple components of honey, maple syrup, and even dates in particular that are commonly used as natural sweeteners that make them just slightly better in terms of a sweetener component for your use. Now, I mentioned the simple sugars. Now let's talk about compound sugars. Compound sugars are multiple combinations of the simple sugars. And so sucrose, table sugar, would be considered a compound sugar because we have fructose and glucose. Lactose, that's a milk sugar. You can find that in yogurt and milk and ice cream and things of that nature. Now keep in mind, yogurts, ice creams, all have also added sugar in addition to what naturally occurs in the dairy products. Now, maltose is another sugar that is found in malt products. Now, it's also found in fruits and grains. Maple syrup, another common sweetener, is a compound sugar, and it's about 70% sucrose. So that's fructose and glucose. So if it's 70% sucrose, what is the rest of the 30%? It's a combination of different starches and enzymes. Same thing goes with honey. There's a lot of different enzymes in it and compounds that make it up. So it actually is slower to break down in your body than plain old table sugar. Now, starches, what are those? These are complex sugars. These are long chains of sugar molecules. Starches come from plants.
We think of starches when we think of things like sweet potatoes or squash, something in that case. In particular, kind of your tuber or your vegetables or, yeah, tubers, things that grow underground. They're going to have long, complex chains of sugar. And so in that case, those will be harder for the body to break down, right? Because there's multiple components to it. It's not very simple. So what I'm trying to describe here is that the simpler the sugar, the quicker it is broken down and really absorbed by the body and utilized. Whereas the more complex it is, the longer it takes to break down, so the longer it takes to spike your blood sugar. So what does this mean in the long term? A sweet potato, a carrot, for example, those are going to break down eventually into glucose. So is a cracker, so is a piece of cotton candy. But the piece of cotton candy is going to spike the blood sugar faster. So this is the concept of glycemic index, if you will. This is the whole background on that, how foods get into the body and are going to have their effect on blood sugar. How fast does it happen? So drinking fruit juice versus eating a piece of fruit, much different concept here. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves about juicing is that when people juice, they take the fiber out of the vegetable. Right now, it's really hot for folks to be drinking celery juice. And I get the idea, but wouldn't you want the fiber from the celery? Yes, we all need fiber. It's good for our gut bugs. So the idea here is that if there's fiber in it, meaning like apple versus apple juice, pear versus pear juice, you're going to want the real deal closest to nature, non-processed item. You get the idea. I'm sure it's no secret. A lot of people are already like, oh, God, get to the point. So anyway, you got that. Let's move forward. Now, a lot of people don't 100% understand what happens with sugars when we get them into the body. In fact, sugar, so table sugar, glucose and fructose, doesn't actually digest in the stomach. It actually breaks down when it gets in the small intestine. Then it goes to the liver, and then we've got bloodstream stuff going on in between. So glucose in the blood is going to stimulate your pancreas to release insulin. So folks who are type 1 diabetics, they do not have the ability to make insulin from the pancreas. Folks who are type 2 diabetics, the theory goes that they have, quote, worn out their body's ability to make insulin because they've overindulged with sugars. Now, I kind of seen that there's more of an autoimmune component even to this pancreas and some components there. And in fact, I don't always see pancreases stop releasing insulin as a result of overconsumption of sugar. I've seen it as a result of stress and things of that nature too, because keep in mind, stressors cause you to release glucose into the system. Cortisol spikes your sugars. And so you might be the most perfect, cleanest, non-sugar eating person in the world, but if you are stressed to the max, you could cause insulin resistance. That's not good. So something to think about, because I have a lot of people that will come into my office and they'll be like, I'm eating clean, I'm eating perfect, I don't know what's happening. And we go through, you know, the sauces and the salad dressings and make sure that there's not a ton of added sugars. And I find that they're not eating all those things. And when I find out how stressed out they are, that's where I'm going, uh-oh, that insulin keeps getting released as a response to the cortisol putting the blood sugar up. Now, when insulin is released into your bloodstream to counter your glucose going up, so your blood sugar going up, insulin turns off fat burning. Keep that in mind. So if your insulin levels are going up, your fat burning is turning off. Why? Because the idea here is that the insulin is supposed to help you to get the glucose in the cells for energy making. Because otherwise, we're fat burning when we're taking fat and turning it into energy. This happens between meals. It happens overnight. Can happen after an exercise routine if we haven't fueled right away after that exercise. Now, I'm not saying to go too long after exercising without eating, though.
you want to replenish your muscle glycogen and your protein. Because if you wait too long and you're already in a muscle wasting state, you can make yourself worse. So keep that in mind. But insulin turns off fat burning. So the higher levels of insulin that you have floating around in your system, the more you are not going to be burning any fat. This is also why you don't want to be eating all the time, or why you don't want to be grazing all day long. I am a huge proponent of circadian rhythm balance and making sure that you eat on a regular schedule so that your body knows when to expect foods versus eating all day long or skipping meals. It gets confusing for your body. Why stress it out anymore? Routine is key here. Now, all the data has shown that overnight for 12 hours to 14 hours at the most, for most folks in this case, that's sufficient. So 12 hours from when you stop eating to when you eat again, so from dinner to breakfast, is ideal. And like I said, 14 on the high end for keeping you out of insulin resistant states. Those of you who eat late at night and then wake up early to go to work and have breakfast early and 12 hours hasn't passed in between dinner and breakfast, you are setting yourself up for insulin resistance. So keep that in mind. Now, I'm very conscious of not wanting to cause any eating disorders in anybody in this case. Just want you to be, let's say, familiar of what can happen. Now, would you throw yourself into an insulin resistant state if you ate dinner late once a week or every so often? No, it's a regular habit that causes problems. So keep that in mind. So let's talk a little bit about honey, because there's a huge debate. Is sugar better? Is honey better? What's the deal? So honey's 30% glucose, 40% fructose, and 25 different other sugar molecules. So it's much more complex than table sugar being glucose and fructose. It's a big deal. Dates, for example. Dates come from the date palm tree. Oftentimes, they are dried because we don't eat them fresh. These guys are glucose, fructose, sucrose, and maltose. So that's 4 different types of sugars and 9% fiber because it is a fruit. And keep in mind that depending on what type of fruit you're eating, there's different amounts of fiber. Most fruits are going to have fructose. It all kind of depends. Mangoes, for example, higher on the glycemic index because they have more sugar. And when I say sugar, glucose, fructose combined there in that case, and fiber. And so you can see easily how I get it even confused. I apologize. But the point being here is that eating fruits in their natural state is going to help with slowing down the body's uptake of the item versus table sugar. Really, the reason I wanted to show you the breakdown on these is that really honey, dates, maple syrup, sugar, it all breaks down to the same thing eventually. It's just the amount of time it takes to get to that state. And ideally, the slower something is broken down to the energy state, the better for insulin resistant states, better for your health, so you're not spiking your blood sugar. So there you have it. Now, I know it's really popular right now to use dates for energy bars, like blend them up with nuts, and I love to do it as well. And I, you know, on a regular basis will play with any given one of these things. But the important factor is portion control here, because you can be making your date balls for energy and eating like 20 of them in a day, and you have to think about the compounded effect that that has on your blood sugar. 2 of them a day, no big deal. Great sweet treat, great fiber content, great for your body. Same thing goes with, you know, 1 cookie a day versus 25 of them. Probably not a good idea. But if you take a cookie and compare it to a date ball that you would have, say, nuts and dates in there and maybe some pumpkin seeds or something, and maybe you put, you know, who knows what's in there. Anyway, you know, that compared to a cookie,
obviously the date is going to get broken down slower, and so you're going to have sustained release of the sugar versus quick release, and that's a lot better for your blood sugar in the long run. So there you have it. Now, a lot of folks wonder where these added sugars are lurking, and I've kind of made a little bit of a hint as to where they're lurking, and I will have a whole list of them along with a guide in my resources at drjkrausend.com, and there will be a link to that in my podcast notes, so check that out if you're interested. So condiments, of course, anything that you're going to put on top of food, even relishes, if you like to put that on hot dogs, you're going to find some sugar in there, especially if it says sweet relish. Sauces, dips, frozen foods, convenience foods. I've seen it in a lot of hummuses, there's sugar added to it. Spice packets, even chips. If you have flavoring to your gluten-free rice, cracker, chips, whatever they may be, chances are there's some sugar in there. Crackers, if they have flavoring, for sure, there is going to be some sugar in there. Cereals, absolutely. Granola, 100%, there's sugar in there. You'll be astonished. Granola bars as well. Yogurt, if there's any flavor to it, if it's not classified as plain, you're going to have added sugar in there, and quite shockingly. So compare, you know, a vanilla flavored yogurt to a plain. You'll be like, whoa. Energy drinks, it seems that goes without saying, but I've had to talk to some folks about that. Soda, of course, we all know that. Salad dressings, for sure. Spaghetti sauce and pizza sauce. Protein powders. Even though they may say that they are low carb, read the label. If there's maltodextrin, that is sugar. It's corn sugar. Take a look at these things. It's shocking. Bread's going to have sugar in it. Peanut butter, jam. Not all peanut butters. Just read the label. Jams, protein bars, alternative milks. Most of them have it, unless it absolutely says unsweetened. Canned fruit. Anything that's low fat. And a lot of things that are vegan. So your fake cheeses, look at those. A lot of times they're going to have some sugar in there to make them taste good. Because otherwise, let's face it, vegan stuff is not the tastiest when it's processed. If you make it yourself, you can make it taste a lot more amazing. But yeah, just read your labels, folks. Read, read, read. A lot of times it's a huge eye-opener. Now, let's talk about insulin for a minute, because I think it's really important that you guys hear that the way your body responds to insulin is not going to be the same as your neighbor's. We all have a lot of different factors that affect insulin levels. I've already mentioned stress, but what I haven't mentioned is the amount of sleep you get that affects insulin. Also, the amount of good bacteria that you have on your gut, what diets you've been through, because if you've just come off of a ketosis diet or a very low carb diet, your gut bugs are going to be primed to store fat for fuel because that's what you were doing before. So then, unfortunately, you add a bunch of carbs and sweeteners in, and then guess what happens? Boom, weight goes way up. And unfortunately, this time of year that we're in, I'm doing this podcast in December right now. Yes, my gift to you to torture you over the holidays about sweeteners is that a lot of people will stop their ketosis or low carb diets to celebrate the holidays. And it's actually a problem, because if you've been doing it for a while and you've trained your body to use fat for fuel, as soon as you try to switch over, there's some lag time, let's put it that way, especially with your gut bugs, and your gut bugs are primed to store fat. And so you'll notice a huge shift in weight. And things do level off, but it gets crazy. So those of you who are wanting to celebrate the holidays off of these particular low-carb diets, I highly recommend making your own foods and not eating a lot of the added sugars, because it'll blow you up real fast. I've done it to myself. And, you know, honestly, a lot of what's happened with me in terms of my progress with weight and evolution with weight, and what I see with a lot of patients, is when they come off of these low-carb, ketosis-based type of diets, they want their chips and snacks. And these are the worst
items because we've got stuff that's a bunch of added sugars on top of being already a carbohydrate, which would be like your rice cracker or your potato chip. And I'm just calling myself out here in general, just to kind of give you a sense of how things go south, because I'm not perfect. And I love to remind folks about that, because I struggle just as much as the next person with food and trying to figure out what works best. And so I like to give you the breakdown in terms of what I know, my knowledge base, but what happens in my brain too, because you can know all of this, but your brain, you know, it causes tricks on you, especially when you're stressed. So keep that in mind. So with insulin problems, meaning we are pumping out too much insulin, we're shutting down our fat burning, really the biggest issue here is that we're eating too much food and we're eating excess carbs on top of that excess food. And all of that triggers fat storage. Combine that with being stressed and you have a big problem. A lot of people tend to be most stressed in the morning on their way to work. They're rushing around trying to get where they need to be. Maybe traffic stresses you out. Maybe trying to get your kids and everybody else situated in the morning stresses you out. And then on top of that, you eat a higher carb meal. And maybe you have two breakfasts. I hear this from a lot of people that they'll grab a banana running out the door along with a granola bar. And then when they get to work, they'll have yogurt and more granola. Too much carb on top of already being stressed. Honestly, breakfast time is the best time to eat dinner food, like veggies and like ground chicken or turkey or something, and not a lot of carb, and save the carb for later on in the day. It's just something to think about. And it's really, if I can't stress it enough, I'm gonna say it one more time, eating too much food on top of stress, on top of excess carbs. So too much food, so big portions with extra carbs, and then being stressed. That is a huge component at the heart of fat storage in the US in particular, and what I see in my practice and what I've seen with myself. And so you're basically taking all your energy that you could normally use for your body, but it gets stored as fat instead because insulin is not working like it should to get that glucose into your cells, because your cells are tired. They're sick of seeing the blood sugar spike. They're like, we're done. We've had enough. We can't take any more sugar in. It's like a conveyor belt, and the machine being the cell that's taking in the glucose, it just can't take anymore. And so if you imagine glucose as being these little boxes on a conveyor belt, and the boxes start falling off back into your bloodstream, where do they go? They get shoved to your storage areas. It's like your storage containers that you haven't seen in 20 years, but you keep paying on them. It's the same thing. So this is not good. And in fact, in the long run with insulin resistance, your muscle cells actually stop reacting to insulin. Fat cells won't stop reacting to insulin. Fat cells will take in all the glucose from the insulin like no other. Keep in mind, if you want to think about this a little bit more metabolically, insulin is your transporter that gets the glucose to the cell and kind of opens the door for the glucose to get into the cell. That's what it does. And fat cells never become insulin resistant, unfortunately. Your muscle cells do. And this is why I see a lot of ladies losing muscle mass and gaining fat. It's not good. It's not good at all, because your muscle cells are like, I've seen enough glucose. I don't need any more. So essentially, the longer your blood sugar remains raised over time, insulin has no choice but to take your glucose and put it to your fat cells versus in your cells. So that's not good. So what do we do about this? We want to reverse that insulin resistance. And it's a little easier said than done, and it takes time. It takes time. Keep that in mind. I have way too many people coming into my office asking me for quick fixes. If I had a quick fix, I would not be overweight, folks. It wouldn't be that way. I would pass on all of my knowledge to you if I had a quick fix, and I don't. And that's just the way it is. You got to put in the homework. You got to do things right. And you got to be consistent with it. It's going to take more than 3 months on average to reverse insulin resistance. I sometimes have seen it take up to a year in folks, depending on how bad the situation is. Number one, you got to clean up the diet. Get everything out of your diet that has added sugar. So after this podcast, go down to your fridge, go and look in your pantry and see what has added sugar. And basically get it out of there. You can throw it out or you can donate it. You can do whatever you want to do with it. Or you can just eat it up and then be done with it. It's your choice. So do that first. Then you want to work on fasting at least 12 hours between meals. And I know the word fast sounds creepy. It's kind of like the same as diet. It messes with people's heads. But the point being here is I'm not telling you to fast for weight loss. I'm telling you to fast for health reasons, for metabolic reasons, meaning let your body rest from dinner to breakfast every single day, at least 12 hours. I know I had mentioned up to 14. That can happen in some folks, but don't go too much over that. If you have eating disorder issues, don't worry about the intermittent fasting business at this point. Yes, intermittent fasting can help, but at this point, we're just trying to get you off the added sugars. Next, you want to set your meal schedule. You want to be eating at the same time every single day. The reason being is because this also sets your circadian rhythms. Circadian rhythms are tied to better sleep, better outlook on life, and less stress. I have a podcast dedicated to that as well. Of course, like the rest of mine, I don't remember what number it is, but I will put it in my podcast notes for you so that you can refer to my circadian rhythms one as well, because I think it's absolutely important to think about that and really get things set, especially with sleep. You want to be getting at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. I know that there's other folks that say you can get away with 4 or 5 and it doesn't really matter. Well, okay. I'll just tell you what I see in my office. And that's the extent of what I see compared to folks that say it doesn't matter. All the research is pointing more towards 7 to 8 hours in terms of insulin resistance and proper function of the brain. Because keep in mind, you can have some pretty serious brain fog if you are overdoing it with the carbs as well, because you can mess with your gut bugs, and I'll talk about that in a second. And you can also disrupt a protein in your brain called BDNP, so brain-derived neurotrophic factor. BDNF, not BDNP, BDNF. And so something to think about. Now, liver. Liver's a big deal here. Now, keep in mind, I mentioned as soon as insulin is released, we stop fat burning. Our liver is in charge of metabolism versus, so if we're in a metabolic state versus a storage state. Your liver can store fat. Chances are, if you are insulin resistant, you might have a fatty liver. Processing the body's fat is a full-time job for the liver. Once the liver is full of glycogen, meaning once it has taken glucose and stored it, it then starts turning glucose from energy in the cells to fatty acids. So this is where your triglycerides go up in your blood counts. So when you look at your lipid levels, when your doctor looks at your lipid levels, that's where they're going to be like, oh, you got to stop eating so many carbs. Well, for some people, it's not really the carbs. It is the stress and it is when they're eating. It's also how much alcohol someone's drinking, because alcohol stops your fat burning for 10 hours. So the moment you start drinking, you're stopping your fat burning because your liver's got to deal with the alcohol. It's got to convert that to aldehyde and get it out of the system. So as soon as you start drinking alcohol, boom, fat burning's done for 10 hours. So keep that in mind. If you're trying to burn fat and you're drinking alcohol, you're kind of negating your progress there. The other big thing is how toxic is your liver? I mentioned briefly that if you have mold in your home, if you have viruses like Epstein-Barr, meaning mono. A lot of people have reactivated mono causing issues for them. Some people have something called cytomegalovirus causing issues. any of these stealth pathogens, I mean, Lyme, another one of them, a biggie. If you have a stealth pathogen, that can also be slowing down your liver's ability to detox. If you work in a toxic environment, meaning say you're a mechanic, say you're working, you know, with pesticides, whatever it may be, you might have a liver that's really bogged down. So doing a little detox of the liver, you could eat cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, those kind of vegetables, up to 2 cups a day, beets as well. Or you could go and get Liver Cleanse by Gaia Herbs and take that and do that once a month for, you know, and do one a month and on and 2 months off. You could do milk thistle. And I'd cycle milk thistle 1 to 2 months on and take a month off. These would be things to think about, especially if you live in an environment where, say, you can't control the planes flying over you, you can't control what's in your water, things of that nature. Another biggie is dehydration. Being dehydrated makes it difficult for your liver to break down glycogen. So you can't even get glucose into your cells if you need it. And so you might want to consider that, especially in the case of craving sugar. A lot of times if you drink a glass or two of water, you won't have a sugar craving anymore. Something to think about. Also, speaking of sugar cravings, the more added sugars you have in the diet, the more you're going to be craving sugars and something sweet. It's crazy. It just compounds over time. Even if you eat super clean and then you take a break and you go on vacation and you get some sweet stuff, you're going to be more primed to want carbs. It's nuts. Gut bugs. Gotta talk about those, especially in terms of being primed to want sweets. The amount of yeast you have on your gut lining and the different imbalances of gut bacteria on your gut lining do have a lot to do with your cravings for sugar. And the less added sugars you have, the more you're not going to be feeding those negative bacteria and yeast. And so something to really think about, going down to minimals on added sugars. Now, the next thing is related to dopamine. A lot of us will use sugar because we want that dopamine hit, that serotonin boost. Both dopamine and serotonin channels are, let's say, triggered when we eat sugars. And the more bad bacteria that you have in your gut that create toxic byproducts known as lipopolysaccharides, the more of these lipopolysaccharides that are toxic that are produced in your gut, you actually destroy your brain cells that make dopamine. So the more toxic your gut is, the less ability of dopamine production you may have, because you might be killing your cells that make dopamine. It's pretty nuts. So something to think about, because really hitting up the sugars every afternoon, running by the person who has the candy dish in the office, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're actually just feeding bad bacteria and messing with your blood sugars. And usually when we're stressed, that's when we're going to want to go run by that candy dish too. I highly recommend, if you're feeling super stressed out, go and get an herbal tea, like a chamomile tea, or go drink some water with lemon or lime in it and just chill instead of eat. You just want those blood sugars to settle back down. Go listen to some music. Music is actually one of the best things to help with stress management and insulin resistance, which sounds super crazy, but it helps with calming the nervous system down. Now, in terms of dopamine, because let's go back to sugar as a drug. Dopamine is one of our pleasure, you know, it activates pleasure centers, right? It makes us feel good about whatever we've just done. It's a reward, right? And we often reward ourselves with sugary treats. And we actually can reward ourselves with chips that are savory that have sugar added to them too, because of the flavoring. And really, you're thinking about something that's savory, but in your body, you're actually responding to the sugar. Crazy, huh? So, dopamine. There's lots of ways to naturally boost dopamine. There's quite a few herbs. In fact, there's a tropical legume known as Mucuna pruriens. I like it a lot for helping with enhancing mood and memory and brain health. But it's actually a good dopamine booster. And it can help with Parkinson's too. So something to think about. Curcumin, it's the active ingredient in turmeric. I highly recommend turmeric fresh for the gut, calming inflammation, but that won't get across the bloodstream. Mariva by Thorn is a product that you can get a hold of that will help with boosting your curcumin levels in your blood to help to reduce inflammation and help with dopamine production. Ginkgo and L-theanine. So ginkgo is an herb for helping boost dopamine. L-theanine is an amino acid that can help boost dopamine. And then phosphatidylserine, one of my other favorites for helping increase levels of dopamine and serotonin in particular. So something to consider. Now, bonus things that you could do to counter insulin resistance. Acupuncture. Acupuncture is known to help reset your circadian rhythms, but also lower your blood sugar. I love acupuncture for this. Massage. Meditation. If you suck at meditation, try the Muse. Choosemuse.com. Go check that out. I have a whole podcast on that as well. And then cold showers. Sounds really weird. I'm not telling you to take a whole shower that's freezing. End your shower on cold. Just a little blast at the end for about 30 seconds. It is enough to just help reset your immune system and just kind of give your body a good circulatory boost. And that too can help with insulin resistance. So we've talked about what sugar is. What's the difference between sugar and some of the natural sugars like honey and maple syrup and dates, and how it affects your body. We've also talked about what to do to counter these and how circadian rhythms play in here, how your gut bugs play in, how your sleep plays in. So I highly recommend checking out my notes on this at drjkrausnd.com/resources. There'll be a link in my podcast notes, and this is episode 108. So if you're searching for this one and you want to find those notes, head on over there, episode 108, and drjkrausnd.com. I have been working hard on my level of insulin resistance for a while now, and I think I'm starting to see some progress, but it's slow. Like I said before, it takes 3 months, sometimes more, depending on the person. So you really want to be diligent. You want to get your habits set up. You want to just be patient with yourself and not stress out so much. So, that being said, I want you to go do something fun for at least 5 minutes, channel your inner 5-year-old, and then go enjoy the rest of your day. Once again, you have survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Have a great day, whatever you're doing. Hey everybody, Dr. Janine Krause here. If you liked what you heard today, then head over to drjkrausnd.com to find my free resources and information to know when I post something new that's juicy that you might want to check out. Plus, head over to where you get your podcasts and like, subscribe, and write a review to help get the word out about me and help others at the same time to find me. It really does help, and I really appreciate all of your reviews.